This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore! Austin 316 says I just ripped your ass. This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody, guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on all of your podcast platforms, including the one that you are listening to this podcast on. So, with all that stuff out of the way, I hope you guys are doing well. It has been a week since we last spoke, obviously. If you're a first-time listener, I usually do these podcasts Friday night, Saturday morning. It really depends. We're in the fall now, so I'm typically having to work 6 days a week instead of five, which is what I normally do for most of the year. But because of the leaves falling here in Texas, it's absolutely terrible. The wind is extremely bad here where I live, like in the panhandle of Texas, West Texas, so to speak, even though it's technically like at the very top of Texas or Texas. That's always kind of been weird to me, the like labeling of like the geography here in Texas. But I mean, I guess I somewhat understand. But anyways, that's pretty much why my schedule has been out of whack here lately, because these leaves, like, they fall at a rapid rate. I mean, I'm sure that most of you know, like, if you live in the South, you know. I mean, I've driven, like, through Arkansas, Alabama, Georgia. I know how many trees that they have in those cities. But here in Texas, we have a lot of trees ourselves, and this is just not a fun time of year to be dealing with them, to say the least. So if you're not having to deal with leaves, like if you just walk out of your front door and you see your yard covered in leaves and you know you really don't have to mess with it and you just get to say, ooh, nice fall, it's so pretty. Just, you know, don't take that for granted, because some people actually have to go out there and clean those leaves up, and it really, really sucks. But anyways, what we're going to talk about here is obviously the SmackDown that aired on November 5th, 2021 from Evansville, Indiana, even though Roman Reigns didn't want to acknowledge that city. I thought that was kind of funny. It's no secret that WWE doesn't like to market those small towns that they go to. I mean, he literally said, Roman Reigns, that is, in his promo, small no-name town, acknowledge me. Like, Xavier Woods was the one who actually had to say Evansville, Indiana, to let the crowd know that they were going to get mentioned on television. So I did think that was kind of funny, and we'll definitely get into more that happened on SmackDown here in just a little bit. But before we do that, I wanted to comment on some of the stuff that happened this week. Obviously, no shortage of news in the WWE cycle, given another round of releases, another devastating time. If you're a wrestling fan, without a doubt, some of these people that were let go, you likely supported and were a pretty big fan of. I'm sure there were others that you could have cared less if they stayed or not. I mean, I know for my case, there were definitely a handful that I felt like, yeah, it sucks, you never want to see anybody get fired, but you can at least understand the logic behind it in terms of, like, them not being used. Now, does that mean they deserve to get fired? That's a whole other conversation. I have no idea, like, what goes on behind the scenes, how many people they can actually keep employed. I've always kind of thought that in the back of my mind, like, whoever signs the checks, like, whoever actually has to do that. Because, I mean, I know Vince McMahon technically, like, is the boss and he pays everybody, but do you think he, like, physically is writing out all the checks, like, to all the camera people, all the crew setup people, every single announcer, every single wrestler, the referees, just so many people? Do you think he's literally signing every single champ? It's like he likely has a signature stamp or something like that. But, I mean, without getting too off topic, I just basically, there's a lot of people on the payroll. Like, there is a lot of people who get paid. I don't know if it's, like, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. I don't know how it, I don't look into that type of stuff. So I'm not going to sit here and act like I know, but, I mean, they get paid somehow. So I've always thought, man, there's a lot of people who collect a check from WWE, and obviously they have no shortage of money. Their revenue's extremely high. They'll tell you that themselves. They actually just did here a few days ago, coincidentally the same day that they announced some of these budget cuts. But I do think that some of these names did catch me off guard a little bit. I didn't expect some of the more prominent names, even though, I mean, you really shouldn't be surprised these days. But, I mean, to be honest, I did not expect Keith Lee and Nia Jax to be on the list. I really didn't. I thought that those two were pretty safe just with their role. I mean, Keith Lee, looking back now, I mean, the writing was somewhat on the wall, but whenever they just give somebody a new character and they look like they're repackaging them, you just don't expect him to be released. I know nowadays it doesn't matter. I mean, look at Aleister Black, now Keith Lee. It really doesn't matter. They can present you on TV with a new gimmick, with a new name, and the next week you're gone. So, I mean, I guess we're getting conditioned to not be caught off guard with this type of stuff. And it sucks. Like, that's not a reality that us as wrestling fans want to get into, to know, man, like, these people, it's no longer like that home feeling, you know, like whenever you're there. Like, it's starting to feel like a job, at least from the outside looking in. Like, you know, I mean, I just basically, I'm here to collect my check for as long as they'll have me. I got to always be on my A game because you never know. Like a lot of people say with podcasting, a future employer might be listening, you know, like, so a future employer is very much likely 100% watching the WWE product. So you want to put your best foot forward. You want to bring your A game every week. And it just sucks that even if you are bringing your A game, sometimes you will still make that list. But I'm just going to go ahead and read some of these names that I know you guys know, the ones that were just cut. Amanda Jin did a damn good job breaking down all of the news that happened throughout the week, and there was a flurry of news, so shout out to her for being able to gather it all and provide the insight for all of us. So shout out to Amanda Jin for doing that. But I actually want to take it a little bit further, because we've talked about it, right? How many people have been released over the past couple of years, because that's really whenever it's been really, really bad. So let's just take a look at some of the names here, and I'm not going to go over every single one, because clearly there has been like I'm looking at the full list here, just in like from 2020 releases and 2021 releases from Denise Salcedo. I don't know if I pronounced that name wrong. I got this on Twitter. She's the one who tweeted this. But let's just take a look at it and see here. In the 2020 releases, one of the big ones that kind of caught everybody off guard was Zelina Vega. Obviously, she's back now, just won the Queen's Crown Tournament, but she still got released, and it was one of those things that kind of, you know, it shocked the wrestling world, to say the least. Akam and Rezar, forgot what their name was, because they've been gone for so long. AOP, yeah, Authors of Pain, that's what they were. I was trying to think about it, but yeah. That was another surprising one. Rusev, Eric Rowan, Sarah Logan, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, Maria Kanellis, Kane Velasquez. All of those last two, really. I mean, Maria, yeah, she was here back in the Ruthless Aggression era. She left for a very long time. Had a pretty good career in ROH and New Japan, if I'm not mistaken, but came back for a little bit with her husband. And now Mike Bennett, who's also on this list. And now they're both out doing their own thing. Kane Velasquez, he was only here for a cup of coffee for one little program with Brock Lesnar. And that's pretty much all that happened there. Zack Ryder, Primo, Epico, EC3, Leo Rush, Cassius Ohno, Kurt Hawkins, Eric Young, Curtis Axel, No Way Jose. Let's see here. Dash Wilder, Kurt Angle, actually. That's a pretty surprising name to see here, but I do remember whenever that happened. Aiden English, Mike Rotunda, Mike Chioda, longtime referee. Let's see here. Tay Conti, obviously a pretty big name in AEW right now. Heath Slater, Scott Dawson, Serena Deeb, Luke Harper, Jack Gallagher, and literally over a dozen others. But moving on to 2021, this is where the more surprising names started to happen, and we realized maybe this isn't just something that we're going to see once a year. Maybe they're going to make this a more regular thing. Bobby Fish, Mercedes Martinez, Leon Ruff, Tyler Rust, Bronson Reed, Jake Atlas, Bray Wyatt, probably the biggest name on the entire list that we've seen let go. Let's see here. I know there's more. Killian Dane, the Sins Brothers, Lars Sullivan, Steve Cutler, Andrade, Billy Kay, and Peyton Royce, Samoa Joe. He obviously has been brought back, but he was let go for a little bit. I know that was a pretty upsetting thing universally across all the fans of WWE. Kalisto, Chelsea Green, Mickie James, Tucker, Bo Dallas, Mojo Rawley, Wesley Blake, Jessamyn Duke, Kavita Devi, Vanessa Bourne, Skylar Story, Ezra Judge, Alexander Wolfe, Velveteen Dream, Braun Strowman, Lana, Buddy Murphy, Aleister Black, Ruby Riott, Tony Nese, Tyler Breeze, Fandango, Santana Garrett, and then the most recent wave, Nia Jax, Eva Marie, Mia Yim, Harry Smith, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, Lindsay Dorado, Grand Metalik, Katrina Cortez, Trey Baxter. Let's see, B-Fab, Oni Larkin, Ember Moon, Frankie Monet, Scarlett Bordeaux. I mean, man, this was another pretty big one. It makes you wonder. I mean, I didn't count up all those names, but man, that was a lot. That's a full wrestling company's worth of talent. And I mean, if all those people went and signed somewhere else, it would actually be a pretty good promotion. So that just tells you, like, WWE literally let go of a full promotion worth of talent. Literally, they cut half their roster, it seems like. I don't know if that's like a specific number, but I mean, I'd believe it. If somebody told me that that WWE released 50% of their roster over the past 2 years, I would 100% believe it. But it's just wild. I mean, these are what seems like, in my opinion, in my wrestling fandom, uncharted waters. Like, I don't feel like I've been a part of something like this. I mean, I was alive and watching wrestling during the Monday Night Wars, but I was literally like 6 or 7 years old. Like, so I wasn't just knowledgeable of the product, like what's going on, like the ins and outs. I was just, hey, there's Sting. He looks badass with his face paint. The NWO, obviously, one of the coolest factions ever. Goldberg. Remember, I was a WCW guy in the late 90s. So these are the things that caught my attention. And seeing things like this, like seeing a rival company like AEW thriving, which I'm happy to see, and then WWE just continuously disappointing their fans, pissing their fans off by releasing some of their favorite talent. I mean, man, it's something that I'm interested to see how it's going to turn up, like how it's going to play out. That's one thing that really that intrigues me going forward. But I'm not going to lie, there's really no reason for me to have like a whole lot of hope in WWE just because of their track record over the past few years. I feel like their motives and their priorities are a little messed up. I understand the sponsors and, you know, the investors and things like that. Those are the people who you want to make happy. But man, at some point you have to factor in what your fans want, because if they didn't have such a loyal fan base, WWE would be in some trouble right now. But because it's a worldwide, like, just phenomenon, and it has so many diehard fans from like so many different parts of the country who have liked wrestling for decades, like that passion is real. It's not just going to go out the window with some, I guess, bad programming, even though it's been what feels like years at this point. But I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, there are good storylines. There are good things that happen in between. I know that, like, generally speaking, the product hasn't been that great because we're accustomed to seeing some damn good wrestling in the past. Like, I mean, if you were a fan during the Attitude Era and Ruthless Aggression Era, and then early in the PG era, kind of right whenever it got to the Reality Era, you've seen good wrestling, and you know what it looks like. So to kind of be force-fed this kind of stuff here lately, the repetitive roll-ups, things that we just know is going to happen, we could basically predict a show before it even happens. If you just tell us what, like, give us the card, tell us what matches are going to be happening, and I'm sure that we can kind of connect the dots, take you from point A to point B, and at least get pretty damn close to predicting the show. And I feel like that's a problem. I know that sometimes being predictable is the right thing to do, but whenever your formula is so predictable, like, who cares about the results? The formula and everything leading up to it is so predictable, and I feel like that's just a really bad problem with WWE right now. And hopefully it gets better, but I mean, I'm along for the ride either way. I'm enjoying making these podcasts for you guys, so like they say in High School Musical, we are all in this together, so you better buckle up and sit tight, because we're about to get into some pretty good stuff here. Not necessarily what happened on SmackDown, just like in the year, the year calendar. Survivor Series, I know it kind of isn't what it once was, but it's still a fun time to get excited about being a wrestling fan. As soon as this is over, we get into Royal Rumble season, and that's personally my favorite time of year. So there are reasons to get excited, but let's talk about this episode of SmackDown. Like I said, aired on 11/5/2021 from Evansville, Indiana. And it started how most of the SmackDown start. Anytime Roman Reigns is actually on the card, he's most likely going to start the show with the Bloodline, and that's exactly what happens. He comes out and he talks about not being at SmackDown last week. I actually forgot that he wasn't at SmackDown. That was kind of weird to see. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show. I probably didn't, but just given kind of how last week transpired with like my schedule and not being able to watch SmackDown, how I was able to watch SmackDown tonight, which was extremely earlier. Like, I wasn't even off work at this point last week. So that tells you kind of how today's a little bit better. But I didn't really notice that Roman Reigns wasn't actually at the show last week. And that's definitely on me. But he talks about how he wasn't there, and he asked Paul Heyman what happened. And you could tell it's a rhetorical question, because like, that's just what Roman Reigns does. And it's like whenever you come home from school and like you did something wrong and your parents know about it and you don't know that they know about it, and they're kind of asking you, like, hey, is there anything you need to tell me? Like, did something happen today? And you're like, oh man, like, do I lie here? Do I, you know, just come clean and maybe make my punishment a little bit worse? But Paul Heyman, he doesn't even know really what Roman Reigns is asking him, because he immediately starts referring to his interaction with Caleb Braxton last week, where they discussed Brock Lesnar and his actions the previous week on SmackDown, going on that just rampage and completely tearing down everything around him, ended up getting suspended and fined. So Paul Heyman says, well, Caleb Braxton was, you know, poking at me and mentioning Brock Lesnar, this and that. Roman Reigns is like, whoa. What else happened that night? And you could just see it on Paul Heyman's face. He's like, I guess you're talking about the Usos' main event match against the New Day. Yeah, they lost, but the titles weren't on the line. Trying to make it seem not as bad as it is, you know, because he doesn't want to piss Roman Reigns off, who inevitably is pissed off that, in his opinion, the greatest tag team in this generation, the Usos, lost to the New Day. That's just unacceptable in his book. So that's what he's talking about, the main event loss that they had last week. And Woods and Kofi Kingston, because before Woods and Kofi come out, Roman asks, who took the pinfall? And Jimmy and Jay kind of point at each other. Like, they both try to, like, to tell at each other. But if you remember correctly last week, Jimmy Uso was the one who was making the pinfall and then literally got pulled off of him by Xavier Woods. He got pulled off of Kofi by Xavier, and Xavier rolled up Jimmy and got the win. So as soon as they started pointing at each other, I started thinking, wait, how did that match end? And I was like, wait, yeah, Jimmy's the one who lost. And eventually we do find out that it was Jimmy. They make that clear. Roman Reigns gets onto him like you would expect. And then Kofi and Xavier do come out, and Kofi Kingston, he makes some remarks about, like, the head of the table, how the king should technically be sitting at the head of the table, and how Roman Reigns needs a shirt marketed saying head of the table to remind himself that he is the head of the table in case he loses enough brain cells to forget. Just basically calling Roman Reigns stupid or like a meathead, pretty much. Same thing. But anyways, they come out here so Xavier can make a challenge to Jimmy Uso in a match later on that night where the loser would have to quote-unquote bend the knee. So if Xavier Woods were to win, Jimmy Uso would have to bend the knee to him. And if Jimmy won, then Xavier Woods would have to bend the knee to Roman Reigns. So there is some stake here in this match. That's some pretty cool graphics drawn up to basically show you what the match is for and what the loser has to do exactly. So that match is announced, Xavier Woods, a.k.a. King Woods, versus Jimmy Uso in the main event for a bend the knee match, I guess. It might be the first ever. You know, WWE likes to say that. So this most likely is the first ever bend the knee match. But moving on here, we get Naomi versus Shayna Baszler. Now, before this match actually starts, they talk to Sonya Deville backstage, and they're asking her, you know, what her vendetta is against Naomi, and she says, well, I don't really have one. Look at this version of Naomi. She's faster than she's ever been. She's more confident than she's ever been. She's more vocal than she's ever been. I brought this out of her on purpose. It's basically what she's trying to say. She's kind of trying to take credit for this version of Naomi by saying that this was all like part of her plan to just try to push Naomi to bring this side out of her. Well, like I said, we get this match, Naomi versus Shayna Baszler. Naomi does win with a roll-up, and Sonya Deville comes out and uses some BS rope break excuse saying that, well, technically your foot was on the rope before that, so it should have been a rope break or something like that. I remember, like, as she was saying it, I was like, that really doesn't make sense, but I wasn't going to like nitpick it or anything like that or try to think. I was just trying to kind of keep up with the segment, but it did catch my attention. Like, wait a minute, that really doesn't add up there. But she does say that her victory doesn't count and she has no choice but to restart the match. And Shayna Baszler just basically chokes her out right away. So it was kind of not necessarily the best ending there, but the storyline between Naomi and Sonya Deville continues. I do expect that to be at Survivor Series. That would be badass. I would love to see that. So if that's something that WWE has planned, that's something that I will get behind 100%. I would love to see that match probably on the SmackDown side of things, even though Sonya is definitely like a both show character. She goes back and forth and she's that official role. But given that this drama and Naomi is on SmackDown, I think that it just makes sense to have that match. If not at a pay-per-view, it'll 100% be on SmackDown. So we'll see what happens. But I think it's definitely worthy since it's, you know, several weeks in the making now. Let's have this payoff be at a pay-per-view. And I'm not talking about the pre-show. Even if you got to open the show with it, I think that this match is worthy and it's a good storyline behind it. So the writing is on the wall there for that. But next we get a backstage interview with Caleb Braxton and new SmackDown superstar Ridge Holland. And this was kind of my first interaction, or at least my first, you know, introduction to Ridge Holland. I've seen him a couple times, but not really a lot at all. Like, and this was my first, like, actual promo to hear him speak. And he mentions his fandom for Sheamus and how, like, back at his local pub, him and all of his friends would watch Sheamus' big-time matches, like beating John Cena and winning the Royal Rumble. So similar to how Sasha Banks is like obsessed with Eddie Guerrero and Bayley's obsessed with Macho Man Randy Savage and Tegan Knox is obsessed with Kane, I guess Sheamus is finally getting some love, and I guess that might tell you a little bit about Sheamus's age, maybe, that he's getting a little bit up there, that someone who, you know, grew up watching Sheamus and idolizing him is now a competitor and a peer to him. So this could lead to like a Sheamus match, but I don't know, it could lead to something else, maybe like an alliance. I guess we'll see. Either way, I'm on board with that, and I'm excited to see more of this Ridge Holland guy. But we keep things backstage with Shotzi Blackheart. She cuts a very heel promo. I mean, there's no doubt. We saw her snap last week and throw Sasha Banks into her tank and all that nonsense. But it's confirmed now. She is 100% a different version of herself. She talks about how she's no longer faking a smile and how doing that will only get you so far here in WWE. And she says how Sasha Banks ruined the biggest match in her career one-on-one with Charlotte Flair. And I mentioned last week how their chemistry wasn't there, but it got better as the match went on. So I'm interested to see another match between these two, but I agree that probably was Shotzi's biggest match in her career just since she's been on the main roster up against a talent like Charlotte, and for Sasha Banks to insert herself and ultimately cost her the match, supposedly. I mean, they get distracted by anything these days, but nonetheless, Sasha Banks being out there without a doubt factored into the equation. So she has a clear problem and vendetta with Sasha Banks, and that's going to be the program we get going forward, likely because Charlotte is going to be tied up with the Raw Women's Champion, since that's probably what we're going to be doing in Survivor Series. Even though we really haven't heard anything about Survivor Series, they really haven't teased the stipulations and the circumstances with the 5-on-5 elimination matches, whether they are going to be brand versus brand. Roman did take a shot at Raw during this episode of SmackDown, kind of just saying, like, I was gone 1 week and the bloodline sucks. SmackDown sucks. It was almost as bad as Raw. I thought that was kind of funny, just Roman pointing that out. But anyways, hear about Shotzi. She does kind of hint at ditching her tang. She says, I'm going to run over Sasha Banks, and I don't need a tank to do it. So there you go. That pretty much tells you she's done with the tank. That's a babyface type of thing. She's going to come out and be a different version of herself, and I am more than interested in Shotzi Blackheart. She is a hell of a talent. I do feel like her character is unique. I mean, everybody has like specifically colored hair. That lime green, neon green that she has is just badass. All of her tats. I love horror movies too, so I feel like Shotzi Blackheart's character is definitely one that hopefully can get developed a little bit, and I'm wanting to see more of her here on SmackDown. But up next, we get a match between Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo versus Cesaro and Mansoor. And Garza and Carrillo kind of brag about interfering last week and costing Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs the match. There was really like nothing about that like was mentioned this week other than them bragging about it. We didn't see Shinsuke. We didn't see Rick Boogs. Pat McAfee mentioned his displeasure with it. Clearly, he's a big Boogs fan, so I totally understand that, but it was just weird. I do want to see Shinsuke and Rick Boogs get a little bit of revenge on them, maybe cost them a match. I thought that might have been something that happened here, but it wasn't. This was a decent tag team that Garza and Carrillo do end up winning. Now, it was basically with a, let's see the exact terminology, because I don't know what the move was called, but it was basically like a basement dropkick. That's pretty much what it was. It was called something by Michael Cole. He actually named the move, and I tried to hear it twice, and I just couldn't. They didn't, like, break it down, like, syllable by syllable. That's pretty much how I, because it was like a Spanish word. So I didn't clearly get it, so I didn't want to come on here and sound like a stooge and try to butcher it. So definitely, we'll probably see it multiple times going forward, and I'll definitely catch the name whenever the time comes if they do it again. But this is a good tag team. I feel like the tag team division on SmackDown week after week is kind of getting like it's not getting magnified in terms of like getting more and more important airtime, but you're starting to see the depth of it. Like, we're getting to see Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo. We do see the Viking Raiders a little bit later. The New Day is mentioned like throughout the show. Clearly, we have the Usos as the tag team champions. So if anything on SmackDown, we have a damn good tag team division. So I hope that this is something that we see prominently week after week on the show. You have a good division, use it. People love tag team wrestling. I know I do. So definitely want to see them feature more and more tag teams as we go on. And I'll talk a little bit more about the tag teams as we continue here throughout the show. But let's see what happened next. Oh yeah, we get Drew McIntyre with an open challenge. And one thing my roommate pointed out here while we were watching this is he thought that Ridge Holland might have been the guy to answer this because he had that backstage promo and he mentioned how he was such a big fanboy of Sheamus. And just given Sheamus and Drew McIntyre's recent history that they had, I thought this was a good opportunity to kind of introduce himself against a guy like Drew McIntyre. So I thought that was a good call by my roommate, but it didn't happen. Ricochet is actually the one who comes out and accepts this. He smacks Drew McIntyre right in the face, too, before the match starts. He basically says, I'm going to smack you in the mouth and accept your challenge. Tosses the mic, does just that, and they have a match. Drew McIntyre basically just throws him around for the majority of the match. He does end it with a beautiful claymore on Ricochet, who's in midair, like doing like a moonsault. And then as he's doing the backflip, Drew McIntyre just catches him. It's one of the things like when you see Seth Rollins do that stomp, like he tries to do the stomp on Randy Orton at WrestleMania 31 and Randy Orton counters with that RKO. It's like on that level in terms of just like visibly pleasing. So I liked seeing that. And after this match, Ricochet is approached by Ali in backstage and says, look, we're a lot alike. Do you want to team up next week? Pretty much is just what he asks. And Ricochet just straight up says no. Like, look, dude, you're a whiner. You're not a winner. You're a loser. And you're just a flat-out jerk. So, yeah, I'm not doing that. So keep an eye on Ali. He's likely going to do something to Ricochet, whether backstage or the next time Ricochet has a match. You'd expect Ali, being the heel that he is, to definitely get a little bit of revenge on Ricochet for embarrassing him or just rejecting him like that. I don't think that's going to go over pretty well with Mustafa Ali. But continuing on here, we get a segment of Happy Talk with the Viking Raiders as a special guest. Now, the Viking Raiders come out and they immediately just start, you know, talking crap about the show itself. They say that Happy Talk is stupid and that Corbin and Moss are just like, they basically just call them a couple of idiots. And then Corbin and Moss just start making fun of the Viking Raiders because of the way that they look. So the Viking Raiders start to destroy the set, and eventually we get a match. The Viking Raiders versus Corbin and Madcap. And as you would expect, the Viking Raiders dominate this match. And the match doesn't go on very long, but you see some good tag team wrestling. And this is kind of where the Viking Raiders were put on the map, in my opinion. And that led me to the point that I made earlier, just a little bit ago, about the tag team division. Was because of how good they look. Now, the match ends with a countout, basically a forfeit, because Corbin and Moss leave the ring intentionally to get counted out. But this is kind of what made me say, Dan, the Viking Raiders look good. They're a believable tag team. I like their characters. Why not push them a little bit? Like, you there's no reason not to. You have a division for it. The Usos can't just run, like, roughshod over everybody. Like, eventually there has to be a challenger that's worthy. And my dream scenario is that the Viking Raiders get built up and they're the ones who eventually take those championships off of the Usos. Because keep in mind, yes, you want all the gold in the bloodline for a long period of time, but they're not going to lose it at the same time. Like, they're not all going to lose the championships at the same pay-per-view. They're going to spread it out. And Roman Reigns isn't going to be the one who loses it first. And I promise you, the tag team division is not going to just sit there while the Usos are just holding those championships. Like, look at Evolution, for example. They had all the championships for a while. World Heavyweight, Intercontinental, and World Tag Team Championships. And they had all the belts in the faction for a long period of time, but one by one, they started to lose them. Like, the tag team champions, Batista and Ric Flair, were the first ones to lose their belts. And then, obviously, Randy Orton, and then Triple H inevitably lost his championship to Chris Benoit. You guys know how all that happened, but basically, what I'm trying to say is eventually the Usos are going to lose their championships, and it's going to be a lot sooner than Roman Reigns loses his. So why not? You don't have to have the Usos carry those championships all the way to WrestleMania. Just give them a few months with it, let them dominate, and then eventually let a team like the Viking Raiders take those championships off of them so you could put them over and make the tag team division that much better. That's just my opinion. I think that'd be a good scenario, and I would be happy to see it play out. But continuing on here, Sami Zayn approaches Hit Row backstage. They look a lot different without B-Fab, I will say that. I'm not very familiar with this group, you guys know that. But clearly, they look better as an actual faction with a female presence. Now they just look like another version of the New Day, kind of. And I mean, just, you know, with a really big guy and the two guys right by him, they just look like, you know, another, like the Shield, you know, another three-man faction that we've seen before. We see these things all the time. And I just feel like whenever B-Fab was there, it was a little bit unique, had its own little flavor to it. And now they're going to continue doing their same stuff. Sami Zayn sees them backstage, and he calls their entrance from last week a little bit flat. And he gives them some advice on how to make it better. And they kind of say, well, I mean, can you at least show us what you're talking about? Basically, you know, just sarcastically, because they want to see Sammy make a fool of himself. So he says, yes, exactly. I will absolutely do that. So he does have a little bit of a wild entrance himself. If you saw this, it was pretty cool seeing Sammy do this. Like, not like cool as in, man, I want to see that again, but just because Sammy's entrance has always been kind of the same thing. And for him to just come out and like start headbanging to his new song, I thought that was funny to see. But anyways, Hero does come out after Sami Zayn, and they basically just make fun of him some more. They come out and they each drop some bars, and it ends with Sami Zayn, or it ends with Top Dollar getting the crowd to say Sami sucks. So that's kind of how he leaves, and he says that they're going to regret this. So Sami Zayn is going to be the first person who interacts with Hit Row. That's a damn good pairing. It confirms that they are a babyface group. You're not going to have a heel group go after Sami Zayn, who's clearly one of the best heels on SmackDown, if not the entire company. So a good pairing right off the bat. Who knows? B-Fab might have been somebody who just Vince thought that the group would do better without. That maybe he knew eventually, look, we split up tag teams all the time. We're going to split this group up here in like 2 weeks, and you guys don't even know it anyway. So we're just going to go ahead and cut her right now and see if maybe we can get a little bit more time out of this group. Now, I don't know if that's facts, but would you guys be surprised, seriously, if Hit Row would have been like separated? Like, say they kept all of them. Because like, I know they pretty much do have everybody except for B-Fab, but imagine if they kept all of them in like a month or two, they all just got split up to do their own separate thing. We've seen a lot of groups like get that treatment. So I'm not too... I mean, obviously, like I said earlier, you don't want to see anybody get fired, but I'm not thinking that Hit Row as a group is just dead in the water automatically because they lose B-Fab. I think that the other people do still bring something like to the group. I know that the group, like I just said before, that like it was unique with her. She did have a nice female presence there that was just that you don't get from most groups. We'll see if Hit Row can get a little bit of momentum behind them as we end 2021. But moving on here, we get the very last segment of the show, the main event match between Xavier Woods and Jimmy Uso. And Xavier Woods has a new theme song. It's no longer that New Day theme song. I don't know if they're going to completely scrape that. Keep in mind, Big E got his own theme song, and Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston were the ones who were keeping that New Day theme going. Well, Xavier came out to something else this time, so if anything, that's a step in the right direction. If Kofi Kingston is the one who continues that theme song and he's the one who's keeping the actual New Day faction going, like he's the one who won't pull the plug on it, then everybody's assumption throughout this entire time that Kofi Kingston was the worst part of the New Day is proven to be true. But I guess that's something that we'll let play out. Another thing I wrote down here is sometimes it's good to break the mold when you're talking about this King gimmick. Like we all talk about it. It's meant for a heel to win. Well, if you limit it to just being strictly a heel like gimmick to have, and we all know it makes more sense, but if you limit it to that, then it makes the tournament itself so predictable and it cuts off like half of the possible winners. So if somebody can do it right, like I do think Xavier's like the perfect role for a king. And if it does lead to a heel turn, I was on board with that from the second it was like conceived as a thought. So I'd be fine with the heel version of this, but if it doesn't, if he stays as a babyface and he knows how to do it, like he's been doing a pretty good job over it for the past couple of weeks, I will say. So if he continues to do a good job with it, I'm fine with it being a babyface role, and I think that he would do a good job with it. But I kind of just wanted to say that not all the time, but sometimes it's all right to break the mold a little bit and do things a little bit different than what you're used to. But as far as the match goes, one thing that I wrote down here was the leg drop that Xavier Woods hit on Jimmy Uso during the match when he jumps off the top turnbuckle. That was crazy. Like, I just don't know if I've ever seen that. Honestly, I've seen leg drops just from like Hulk Hogan and stuff like that, but to literally just jump like 15 to like 16 feet in the air and land straight on your ass with a leg drop, that's just, I mean, it was impressive to see. I'll give Xavier Woods credit. That was nice. But he does win this match with a roll up after Jey Uso tried to assist Jimmy with a pinfall, similar to how they did it with Dominic Mysterio a few weeks ago back in their program, where they were just like trying to use their feet to push him down. Well, the referee cut onto him immediately and he stopped the pinfall. And then Xavier Woods capitalizes, goes in there with the roll up and secures the win. And after the match, Jimmy Uso is very slowly, very reluctantly trying to bend the knee like the stipulation of the match called for. So he's doing it slowly, starting to bend the knee, and out of nowhere, here comes Roman Reigns, hits a Superman punch. The Usos start to jump Kofi Kingston. He hits a spear on Xavier Woods, and they beat the hell out of him. We've seen this happen to so many people over the past year. Xavier Woods is now the next in line. And Roman Reigns says, if you show up next week, I'll show you exactly what a king looks like. So this is likely going to be who Roman Reigns is feuding with going forward, is Xavier Woods. That's what it tells me. I would be on board with that. Why not? We've seen Roman Reigns feud with damn near everybody. So having him go with somebody new, it's just another name that he's going to mention as guys that he smashed. So, I mean, let it happen. It's Xavier Woods is somebody who can tell a story. I'm a big fan of Xavier Woods just as a pro wrestler. I'm not necessarily a fan of his character, but I know how good he really is and how like charismatic he is. So if he can do this right, this king babyface role, it'll be a hell of a matchup and a hell of a story with Roman Reigns, just how they do the head of the table stuff and all that. So next week, we're likely going to see more of Roman Reigns and Xavier Woods butting heads. So look forward to that. I know Amanda Jen is actually going to be at that SmackDown. So definitely shout out to her. I was at the SmackDown in Houston back in July, and you are going to enjoy it. SmackDown's a hell of a show to go to. The McAfee Minute, which they don't show like on TV, obviously it's during a commercial break, but in the arena, Pat McAfee kind of just stands up and he gets the crowd extremely pumped up and he like hypes up whatever city they're in. So something fun for the people who have been at SmackDown. They know exactly what I'm talking about. But that is the SmackDown that aired on November 5th, 2021. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite episode of SmackDown. It really wasn't very noteworthy. There are some episodes that are like, damn, that was some good stuff. I mean, there were some good things. I like seeing Shotzi Blackheart. Xavier Woods really showed me some good stuff. I was introduced to Ridge Holland. So there is some good stuff that's happening on SmackDown. But that just tells you, I mean, how good, or at least what we're accustomed to, like our standards are set pretty high when it comes to SmackDown. At least me personally, I've seen some damn good shows. So I know they're probably going to have another banger next week. They'll have their fastball, and I'm looking forward to covering it. So I hope you guys all have a fantastic weekend. A lot of episodes for you guys to listen to, a lot of good podcasts here on the network. So definitely check them all out. You will not regret it. Subscribe to Patreon, $1 a month. Without a doubt, it is worth it. You get all of these episodes ad free. As soon as you listen to one podcast ad free, you will be like, what the hell have I been doing? So definitely jump on the Patreon bandwagon for that reason alone, if not for the Discord chat, because that's where a lot of news gets broken in terms of like with Amanda Jen. She'll kind of tell us, hey, did y'all hear about this? So you kind of get a little bit of like an advance on the stuff that happens, even though you most likely have heard about it anyway. But you get that conversation with the co-host before an actual episode drops, breaking the news. Just one of the many perks that we have here. So once again, thank you guys so much for listening. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.